Merle with Merle. And I'm your host, Merle Exit. It's a sun-filled day here in New York City. Yep. With the Pope-mobile on its way and just in time to celebrate Passover. Well, we have a lineup of topics here tonight, as well as for here it's tonight, as I recently came back from Branson, Missouri, which I don't know what is it called. I guess it's the Christian Las Vegas would be a great way to call it, or maybe the best place I've never been. But we'll get to that and as to why. Then we have raising your parents can be difficult, especially when you're a teenager. So we have author Sarah O'Leary Birmingham, who's going to tell us how to raise your parents. There's Fungus Among Us. Yes, it's Golden Gourmet Organic Mushrooms. Why are these mushrooms different from all other mushrooms? Well, we're going to find out later on. But before I get to my trip from Missouri, I got just a couple of announcements here. First of all, for those of you that are interested, the River Dance is being performed April 22nd to the 27th at the New Jersey Performing Arts Center. Tickets are on sale, $23 to $79. And you can go to www.njpac.com. If you're not in the New Jersey area or don't feel like schlepping to New Jersey, you can go to the website of riverdance.com and see where the show will be nearest you. And the other announcement I want to make, yes, it's that time of the season again for the IWFL. The New York Sharks having their opening game on Saturday here in downtown Brooklyn. Oh, no, it's not downtown Brooklyn. It's like actually right off the Belt Parkway, Brooklyn. And we're going against the Baltimore Hawks, who are new to the IWFL. This is going to be one hot game. And guess who's going to sing the Star Spangled Banner? No, it's not the Dancing Queen. It's yours truly. I just have to be trying to get the right note to begin and end with, and I'll get through it. Before I get to my whole thing on Branson, Missouri, let's catch one of our sponsors. Okay, all right. I hate to make you hungry, you know who it is, but what would you do to earn brownie points? How about treating someone to what may be the best brownies they've ever tasted? Fairy Tale Brownies. They may seem like one of the richest bars of fudge, with varieties that include caramel, chocolate chip, espresso nib, raspberry swirl, mint chocolate, all made with Calbo dark Belgian chocolate. But yes, they are brownies. And that's no fairy tale. Okay, if you think that's bad, wait till next week when I'm going to have the chocolate traveler on. All right, so let me, now if you tuned in last week, I was in Branson, Missouri, doing the show, and that was such a hoot. And what I had talked about was on the itinerary. At that point, it was Thursday, and I arrived on Thursday. So what I got to do was they had the Branson Fest going on, and so in the afternoon, they had a show to highlight some of the stars in town or the shows in town. They had the Liverpool Legends. Jim Owens, who was actually hosting this little show, group called the Dutton, the Island Fire. They had the Dutton family. They had the Platters, the Haygoods, and so that was at the just the beginning of my day. And then I went over to have dinner at. I was supposed to go to Outback's steakhouse, and they have a steakhouse and a pub. And I was absolutely dying for having to have the Apalachicola oysters, really the best oysters. Apalachicola, Florida, is really where they have some really, really great oysters. And but as it turned out, the steakhouse went on fire, so I couldn't go to the steakhouse. So we went to the pub. Okay, and so then I did my radio show. And I had one of the guys from the Haygoods on, and I had McKenna Medley, who Bill Medley's daughter, and the guy, the owner or cooker from the Outback State Pub. Okay, and so that was the beginning of the evening, and from there I went off to Dick Clark's American Bandstand Theater. And I'm going to tell you, well, let's see if you can guess who was there by my playing the song, if I can find it. Let's see, where is it? I know I uploaded it there. Let's see, do I have it here? Well, I'll tell you what, let's see. Oh, here we are. There it is.
This is a song called Kicks. Yeah, and it goes like this.
One of the Raiders is actually the son of Bill Medley. So Bill Medley's son is now part of the Raiders. So I guess it looks like instead of the righteous brothers, we got the righteous kids. that's okay. On the show was really good. They did a great job, and it was they're quite funny. They're somewhat insane too, and it was great. I liked that show. So that's something that did happen. And following that, and of course, I tried to get the single of a certain person, and of course you'll recognize the song. But it was not done as a duet, and you'll know this one.
So obviously Bobby and I are very, very proud of this song.
What is it?
Choo. I thought you knew.
I just uploaded the wrong one. You know which song I meant, the one that's from Ghost. But now that was also a great show. As I said, he had his daughter came on there, and he did some absolutely fabulous songs. He still has that voice, and so that was Thursday. Now. All right, so now that the restaurant that I was supposed to go to was burnt down, now the next morning we were to arrive. It's Branson Landing Cruises. Join us as we take a special cruise down Lake Taneycomo aboard the Branson Landing Princess. Public sightseeing cruises are cruising the Branson Lakefront along Lake Taneycomo once again. Well, they weren't. They weren't because there was a flood. Yes, folks, there was a flood. And so the scheduled trip a along the river was not going to happen. But I did go down there and took some pictures of the flood, and I took pictures of stores that said closed due to Mother Nature. So Branson Landing, but I did, I was ready, it was like early in the morning, and I was going to pop into the stores, but they didn't open until 10. But I had decided instead, I was told, well, I can always go on the choo-choo. Yes, there's a choo-choo that takes you to the Ozarks. And I thought, okay, so I'll go and I'll take the choo-choo, and I'll take the 9 o'clock choo-choo. And I go over to take the 9 o'clock choo-choo, and it's not going out. They said I can take the 11:30 choo-choo. But I said, no, it's not my schedule. I have something I have to do at 11:30. So far, no boat and no choo-choo. Okay, and so now their next thing is our luncheon. And our luncheon was scheduled at the Branson Convention Center, which is the Hilton, at the Hilton Hotel. And we arrived there to find out they switched the hotels. And it was at a Hilton, but it was the Hilton where I just came from because I had met some friends who were staying at the one that we would have just hung out had they told us. Okay, and there we talked about the new Branson Airport. Yes, the Branson Airport that says it's, even though the new Branson Airport is the second largest land moving project in the country, the construction is right on schedule. Yes, it will open in the spring of 2009. So we went to the luncheon to not see the airport. And so now that we finished having lunch, our next thing scheduled was that we were going to ride the ducks to the all-new Souten Sight and Sound Theater. Okay, so we rode the ducks. Now, does anybody know what the ducks are? The ducks, it's this these vehicles. I think they were supposed to be from like World War II, and they can go on land and sea. And when you ride the ducks, you usually get a verbal tour as you're going around the city or whatever, and then it goes into the water, and you do some more, and then it comes back up to land. Well, obviously, we couldn't go into the water because of the floods, and the land tour didn't happen. We just basically, as if we took a taxi there, we just took the duck in the vehicle and just drove right to the Sight and Sound Theater without gabbing anything about, you know, on your left and on your right or things like that. And there we went, we got to see. Now, the Sight and Sound Theater, they describe this as, I guess, Christian Broadway. Now, it's true. They have the same thing in Lancaster, Pennsylvania. And I saw it a long time ago, and they always tend to have real live animals all over. And this one they were preparing, they're going to do, and I know the musical. Well, I'm sorry, when I heard they were doing Noah the Musical, I had to go hysterical. I just had these thoughts in my head of songs, singing, you know, they're having songs like Singing in the Rain, Hark the Herald Angels Sing, Teeth for Two, you know, things like that. And so we went there, not to see the show. So we went there to go to the show that was not there. We got a sight tour. So we got to look at the sets, the stages, and a little bit of a rehearsal that was going on. So we went there to not see the place. So let's see. So far, I went on the no cruise, the no choo-choo, the no airport, the not the ducks, and to the not Sight and Sound show. Okay. And the next thing, okay, well, we finally got to see something, and I'm going to tell you about that right after I am going to take a break here for one of our sponsors.
Thank you for calling JetBlue. May I help you?
My cousin was telling me you guys have extra legroom.
Uh-huh. We have extra legroom as compared to a normal coach seat.
Okay. If I don't have an extra leg, can I use that room for something else?
No. That is not what the extra leg implies. We took out one whole row of seats, and that gave the rest of those rows a couple of extra inches of legroom.
Ah.
I understand what you mean. The words extra leg imply that, but it has nothing to do with having an extra leg.
I'm a pretty literal person.
Uh-huh. Well, that would be taking it very literally.
I guess a little too literally.
Okay. Is there anything else I can help you with?
I think that's it. You've been pretty helpful.
Thanks for calling JetBlue.
Dear traveler, stretch out. We now have the most legroom in coach. Visit us at JetBlue.com. Sincerely, JetBlue. Based on average fleet-wide seat pitch of U.S. Airlines.
Don't you just love that? Yes. I think I'm JetBlueing at the end of May to go to California again. Now, the next place we went to was actually there. It was really great, and I'll talk about it in a moment. You'll know it when I play this song.
Once more, you open
Yes, it was the Titanic Museum. That's where we went to. This is really, really great. But what they were doing, they have an entire gallery that pays tribute to the Titanic movie. Behind the scenes photos, stories, costumes. And I think in a couple of weeks, actually, I'm going to have the owner come on and talk about the whole museum, the artifacts. Everybody gets like a little ticket there, and you get to have a name of who you were. And then toward the end, you get to take a look at the list and see if you dropped dead or not. Well, I didn't die. I was Molly Brown, and I'm unsinkable. And probably considering because of all this wonderful, delightful food that I'm eating, I'm probably unsinkable. So that was that. And that evening, I went to the Imaginary Theater to see this guy, Justin Flom. It was a show that had all kinds of magic and stuff, which was pretty good. I didn't realize that the gospel was going to be spoken in the evening, as he talked about the gospel and his ministry of magic. He takes magic around the world, showed us a whole movie of taking magic to make people feel better. Give me a drink instead. Or maybe we can turn the water into wine. And so that was for that evening. Now Saturday comes along, we go to Silver Dollar City, the World Fest. And it was all kinds of global culture, music, dance, food. It's a theme park, I guess. Kind of thing with, you know, some extra stuff. And one of the shows, we got to see the Irish Celebration. And it was really cool. As a matter of fact, just because of the dancing, the Irish dancing that they had, I'm looking not to go to Ireland, especially now that I'll go see Riverdance as well. One thing for sure, at Silver Dollar City, you can get crosses in any form. You can get it in made of, let's see, there was woodcutter, then there was the silversmith, wrought iron, bronze, just about anything you wanted to. I went into one store and bought a Jew's harp. That was probably the only Jewish thing in the entire county. Well, it's not really Jewish. I don't know how it got the name Jew's harp. I'm going to learn how to play it along with the other dozen instruments that I have in the house as well. And so that was what we spent most of the day over there. And in the evening, yes. Now, of course, I will play. We're getting ready for another song because of who I saw. And I have to tell you, this is really interesting of who I saw. Because it was like one of my father's like favorite singers. And yet, for somehow or other, I wound up like, you know, they have three albums, you know, record albums. Anybody out there remember record albums? Yeah, well, so I wound up having record albums of this guy. And I'm told that they took him out of the wax museum to have him perform. He's like he's going to be 81 years old. Let's see if you recognize who I'm talking about. Yeah. This is from his latest CD.
I remember many things, like summer skies and fireflies, just simple things, like the little symphony you hear each time a robin sings. remember many things. It wasn't very long ago that Peter Pan and I would fly away and go to that very strange enchanted place that only children know. No, it wasn't very long ago. Dancing in the moonlight to your favorite song, and dreaming dreams that dreamers often do, waiting for the day that special someone comes along. Oh, how I love this one more chance to dream that dream and dance that dance. Memories I still embrace, like hiding from the world inside my secret place. And the way I'd laugh when clowns would smile and make a funny face. These are memories I can't erase. I remember when we wished upon a star, when time was on our side, we had it all. Tomorrow will be yesterday in just a dream or two. I wish that I could start again, but now is now and then was then. When I go to sleep at night, I think of all I've done and hope I did it right. 'Cause now I'm so aware of how life goes by at twice the speed of light, leaving you with just your memory. Each memory I'll cherish all my life, 'cause I have lived and I've filled my cup. I remember many things, but I don't remember ever growing up. Don't remember ever growing.
Growing up myself, yep. I don't know what happened with all that time there. As a matter of fact, let's see, I got up before I get to. Oh, let me just finish up. Basically, that's all I. That's all that I got to do there. Sunday, I wanted to go hot air balloon riding, but they were closed on Sunday. Choo Choo closed on Sunday. Helicopter ride closed on Sunday. Never on Sunday. When did I get to? Oh, went to, actually, what I did to Butterfly Palace and Nature Center. Yes, I got to look at some. I needed some nature. Would you believe that Sunday morning there was snow flurries? Yes, a flood first and snow flurries. Maybe that's why we needed that ark. Who knows? But the Nature Center was nice. I with all those butterflies just flying around me, and there were some parrots there. I got one parrot to extend one little finger, no, one little foot there onto my finger. So I got that far. If had I pushed it, I would have, you know. They kept saying, oh, no, no, he's scared. No, he's scared. Just let me do it. It's okay. So speaking of not remembering growing up, this is an email that I got, so I want to read it to you. This is if you're 30 or older. I won't go to how old I am, but this is if you're 30 or older. This is, when I was a kid, adults used to bore me to tears with their tedious diatribes about how hard things were when they were growing up. What with walking 25 miles to school every day, uphill, both ways, yada, yada, yada. And I remember promising myself that when I grew up, there was no way in hell I was going to lay a bunch of crap like that on kids about how hard I had it and how easy they've got it. But now that, I'm over the ripe of old age of 30. I can't help but look around and notice the youth of today. You've got it so easy. I mean, compared to my childhood, you live in a damn utopia. And I hate to say it, but you kids today, you don't know how good you've got it. I mean, when I was a kid, we didn't have the internet. If we wanted to know something, we had to go to the damn library and look it up ourselves in the card catalog. There was no email. We actually write somebody a letter with a pen. Then you had to walk all the way across the street and put it in the mailbox, and it would take like a week to get there. There were no MP3s or Napsters. You wanted to steal music, you had to hitchhike to the damn record store and shoplift it yourself. Or you had to wait around all day to tape it off the radio, and the DJ would usually talk over the beginning of the goddamn thing and screw it all up. We didn't have fancy crap like call waiting. If you were on the phone and somebody else called, they got a busy signal. That's it. And we didn't have fancy caller ID boxes either. The phone rang, you had no idea who it was. It could be your school, your mom, your boss, your bookie, your drug dealer, a collections agent. You just didn't know. You had to pick it up and take your chances, mister. We didn't have any fancy Sony PlayStation video games with high-resolution 3D graphics. We had the Atari 2600 with games like Space Invaders and Asteroids, and the graphics sucked. Your guy was a little square. You actually had to use your imagination, and there were no multiple levels or screens. We just had one screen forever, and you never win. The game just kept getting harder and harder and faster until you died. Just like life. And you went to the movie theater. There was no such thing as stadium seating. All the seats were the same height. If a tall guy or some old broad with a hat sat in front of you, you couldn't see. You were just screwed. Sure, we had cable television. But back then, there was only like 15 channels, and there was no on-screen menu and no remote control. You had to use a little book called a TV guide to find out what was on. You were screwed when it came to channel surfing. You had to get off your ass and walk over to the TV to change its channel, and there was no Cartoon Network either. You could only get cartoons on Saturday morning. Hear what I'm saying? We had to wait all week for cartoons, you spoiled little bastards. And we didn't have microwaves. If you wanted to heat something up, we had to use a stove or go build a friggin' fire. Imagine that. If you wanted popcorn, we had to use that stupid Jiffy Pop thing and shake it over the stove forever like an idiot. That's exactly what I'm talking about. You kids today have got it too easy. You're spoiled. you guys wouldn't have lasted 5 minutes back in 1975. Oh, yeah, and a seatbelt was Mom throwing her arm across your chest every time she hit the brakes. Yeah, well, I go back farther than that, but I won't go into that. And let's see, so now before I continue on, let's go to, I have another, you know, I have sponsors here, so let's go another sponsor right over here. Click this here.
Italy, Spain, Greece, Turkey, stuff it. We do at Santa Barbara Olive Company. Jalapenos, sun-dried tomatoes, almonds, blue cheese, stuff produced in California. And we stuff some of our cold-pressed olive oils with California garlic and herbs grown right here in our backyard. Our olive oils have been pitted against some of the finest imports. And guess who exceeds in taste tests? Santa Barbara Olive Company. It's the stuff that makes a product great.
Yeah, it makes that product great. I'll go grab some olives. Now, tonight I'm going to be grabbing, so I have a feeling I'll be grabbing a lot of mushrooms. What I also wanted to comment about, I'm waiting for our caller to call in, but in the meantime, and I'm going to follow this up. Now, I got something in the mail, okay? Mailman delivered. It was two pieces of mail, and I'm just going to say, you know, like John Doe. It was addressed to John Doe, had my address on it. A different town in Queens and a different zip code. Now I'm calling up. These are some hospital bills. I'm calling up to find out why I'm getting my, you know, who gave my address. I must have spoken to two or three people. I spoke to this guy Patrick, some this guy named Joe. And the thing is, each one of them keeps, instead of trying to get to who's doing this or how this guy, starts blaming the post office. Why did the post office deliver this to me, you know, with the wrong zip code and blah, 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 you know, and instead of, you know, it's their responsibility. My question is, who actually put in the data of my address? I mean, this says to me this is a possibility of having identity theft. I mean, if you actually, if you were to Google somebody's address, you could find out their name, you could find out who owns the house, there's a lot of information you could find out, the phone number, et cetera, et cetera. And now, you know, I mean, coincidentally, whatever information they do have a phone number for this person, and when they call, guess what, it's disconnected. So, I mean, that signals me to an alert, and I'm keeping asking them, you know, they're assuring me because it's not the same, you know, Social Security number. They gave me the first three numbers of the person's Social Security number, said, no, it's not mine, you know, that it wouldn't be. But who knows? But each time, this the whole point was with this thing, is they kept on trying to throw it over to the post office. And saying that the post office should have sent it back to them as no such person or no address, et cetera, et cetera. But that would say what they would have done and who, how long it would have taken them to even, you know, bother doing this. I would have never known that this was even happening. I'll say it goes back there. And they said to me, people can come in into the emergency room, and they can make up anything. They can make up a name and address and whatever, you know, they have to treat them, et cetera. And then I'm finding out that this person apparently has some more addresses, and et cetera, whatever. That still alerts me to that the possibility of identity theft and not just me or other people. And again, all I can't get conversation, and Joe, like everybody is saying to me, you know, this shouldn't get delivered to you, and, you know, the post office shouldn't deliver it to you, and I'm saying, well, you need to find out exactly who punched the data in. That's where we got to look at. Who punched that data in? Where did they get the information, who put it in there, why did they put it in there. Somehow I think it's kind of odd. It's not that my address is like 25 Main Street. I mean, it's you really have to know this area or something, or know some to be able to come up with this. So I think that I'm waiting for them to get back to me, the New York Presbyterian University Hospital of Columbia and Cornell. That's where the insurance thing is in Nashville, Tennessee. But apparently this thing was done, it seems that there's a 718 phone number on this, so this must have taken place in New York City. I'm not sure if it was in Queens. I will talk to the assistant DA if I have to. If you do find something like this, don't dismiss it. Do not dismiss something like this. Keep pushing it. Check it out. You just never know. Who knows what this person is doing, maybe the whole family, and how they're defrauding the government, but not just the government, that's not just because they keep going to, checking into the hospital, but taking somebody else's identity to do this. But so now let's go over. We're now going to talk a little bit. We changed our subject. How to raise your parents, I believe. Is that who I have here? Do I have her? Who's here? Hello? You're on the air. Do I got you on the air? I clicked on. It looks like you're on the air. Who do I have here? I have a phone number, 646-7635. Who is on the air? I got you on the air. Can you hear me? Can you hear me now? Can you hear me now? Can you hear me now? Well, I had a caller, and I don't have a caller. Let's try again. Let's try again. Let's see. I hope it's not going to be an evening of that you can't get me here. We're trying again. Let's see. Gotcha.
Can you hear me, Merle?
Can you hear me now? Can you hear me now?
I can. Sorry about that. That was the weirdest thing. I don't know what happened when I clicked over, but it's good to be with you.
Yes. Introduce yourself.
Sarah Burningham, and my new book is How to Raise Your Parents.
And tell us, what is this all about? Well, I mentioned it's having to do with your being, as you were a teenager, and how your parents to deal with you. So let's see, how this all came about, and what is it about?
Well, when I was 16, I was, a pretty average teenager. And I came home one night late for curfew. My parents were waiting up for me, of course. And when I was talking to them about my punishment, or more like when I was actually getting my punishment, I noticed on my mom's nightstand a copy of a book called Raising an Ethical Teenager. And I kind of felt like I'd caught my parents, and I said, oh my gosh, you guys need help on how to deal with me. As a teenager, there should be a book for me on how to deal with my parents. And they laughed, and but I kind of grew out of that experience. And then when I got into my 20s, I started kind of revisited the idea and started talking with teenagers and felt like there really was a gap in the market. So I interviewed them and put this book together.
So give us some ideas. What is,
Well, it's everything from curfews to dating to learning how to negotiate. Communication is kind of the basic step one for dealing with your parents on anything. So there's a big chapter on negotiation and bargaining, everything from borrowing the family car to, getting $20 for a night out with your friends. And then there's also a great chapter on cyber life, which I think is kind of the biggest issue with teenagers and parents today. The internet and cell phones and all the new technology that's kind of changed since parents were teenagers.
Yeah.
It's changed a lot, you know.
Yeah, I was just doing this thing about if you're over 30 years old and, you know, about kids, how they have it good now. So I kind of covered some of that. But tell me what you've covered.
Well, you know, the Cyber Life chapter is kind of broken into sections. So it covers, first of all, cell phones, which are really important. And I encourage parents to start texting their teenagers, because teenagers are texting their friends. And your teenager would much rather get a text than an actual phone call. You know, say you're late for curfew and your mom wants to remind you. It's better to text than to call. There's, you know, the teenager gets embarrassed and all of that. So I think parents can use cell phones to their advantage. And then I move into the internet and everything from blogging to social networking. And teenagers are really on top of all of this new technology. So it's important for parents to educate themselves and understand what's going on and understand kind of the safety process to keep their kids safe online. I know that's a big concern with parents. And then they should really sit down and talk with their teenagers about what's okay to put online and what's not. And, you know, if they have family rules about when they can start blogging and when they can have a MySpace profile, parents should lay that out really early. I find kids they're online earlier and earlier. Whether they're emailing or doing homework, I know even elementary school kids are now doing things online for school, and they're playing games. So you should have those conversations early rather than later.
Yeah. I kind of agree on that, because I don't know what would have happened if we didn't have all this technology. We didn't have this when we were kids. How do you think what do you think that we did, though? I mean, like, what would our parents have done when these things didn't exist?
Right. Well, I think it was different. I think instead of blogging, teenagers used to keep diaries. And it was kind of a different format, you know what I mean? But I think a lot of parents have a hard time understanding blogging, just because they wonder why you'd pour your feelings out onto the internet. And yet it's a very accepted form of expression, and there are a lot of really great blogs out there. So, you know, parents who don't understand it should kind of look around and get a feel for what's going on. And I think teenagers can help kind of accustom their parents to that and show them some cool blogs and show them what they're doing online so that they feel more comfortable with it.
Okay. Well, this sounds like more of the serious side to all of this. I did find some humor in the book.
I hope so. I'm glad.
Tell us a little more of the humorous portions of the book.
Well, you know, it's funny, because I think to be a teenager or a parent, you have to have a really good sense of humor. And there are some really good stories in the book. Actually, there's one of my favorite stories is a personal story, and it's what my parents call my Ferris Bueller day off. And basically, when I was in high school, I had begged and begged my parents to let me stay with my friend Jill for a few nights. And it was they were weeknights, so we had school in the morning and parents were going out of town. So they finally gave in and said, okay, you can stay over as long as you go to school in the morning on time. And they made me repeat it before I left. And I said, fine, I'll be at school in the morning. And then I got over to my friends and we stayed up all night, you know, very typical teenager fashion. And by the time the morning came, we were exhausted, so I didn't go to school. And I realized, I don't know how every high school works, but my high school, if you missed a class during the day, there was an automated system that would call home. And it would say, you know, your daughter, Sarah O'Leary, missed one or more classes today. Contact the attendance office for more information. So I knew the school was going to call my parents and that I wouldn't be allowed to stay at my friend's the rest of the week. So she decided, well, we kind of decided together that she would call the attendance office and pretend to be my mother. And I'm actually the oldest of five kids. So she calls the attendance office and she's talking to the secretary and she says, oh, okay, Mrs. O'Leary. Well, you know, can you just verify the birthdays of your other four children? And my friend said, oh, well, you know, I just have so many kids, I can't keep track of all of them. And, you know, she could barely even remember my birthday. So the secretary said, oh, okay, and called my mom and said, you know, was I just talking to you? Were you just telling me that you couldn't remember the names and birthdays of your children? And my mom said, what are you talking about? And literally 10 minutes later, there was a knock at the door, and sure enough, it was my mom. She was there to pick me up and take me to school. And it's funny because it was kind of traumatizing in the moment, but now it's really funny. My parents love telling the story. They think it's hysterical. And I think every teenager has something like that, you know?
Oh, sure. Now, what do you think is the hardest part about being a teenager, other than the, about dealing with your parents?
You know, I think just relating to your parents. But it's funny because I have some lists in here. There are a lot of ways you can relate to each other. Like, music is a really good one, because generationally they're kind of classics that are good, and like the Rolling Stones or the Beatles or Carole King, you know, all those good songs. And so you can listen to stuff from your parents' generation, and then you can play some great stuff from the top 40 for them and kind of get the tune with your generation. And, you know, it's funny. I think a lot of teenagers are surprised that they have more in common with their parents than they think they do when they get down to it, you know?
Yeah, I was commenting before when I was one of my father's favorite entertainers was Andy Williams, and I would listen to it, and it was like, but it got to a point that I bought 3 albums.
Right.
I would listen to it, but it was a different kind of thing. He might have like watched him on TV, and I would like, I'm not interested, you know, in watching on TV. I was interested in just hearing his voice, which is why I wound up buying his albums. So it's interesting to see, you know, when you're dealing with your parents, or people think I'm older than I am if I comment on certain movies. And I say, well,
right,
my parents watch this movie. You're in your parents' house. They have control of the television. And when you're young and they want to watch a particular movie, you sit there
and watch it. Exactly.
You know?
Exactly.
You know, and that's why you know the name. Like, if somebody says to me, I try to tell them, like, yeah, my name is Merle, as in Merle Oberon. And they go, who?
You're
and it's
right.
Like, well, and I said, well, you're probably not going to know. I mean, it's not as if I ever watched a Merle Oberon movie, you know, but I'm sure my parents did. Yes, you know.
Exactly,
so it's that type of thing. And I understand that, you know, but... so this book is out. How long has this book been out, by the way?
It just came out. So it's just landed on bookshelves. It's brand new, yeah.
So it's called How to Raise Your Parents, A Teen Girl's Survival Guide.
Yes, it is.
Yes, and who is it? It's illustrated by Bella Pilar?
Bella Pilar. And
Pilar.
She has a website online, too. She does a bunch of greeting cards and things like that. But she was
cool.
Great illustrator. You know, she has some really cute stuff in here, and she has, like, in this Cyber Life chapter, she's got, like, an iPod and just really cute illustrations.
Oh, cool. Okay. Well, I'm getting ready to talk about mushrooms.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
Yes.
I really appreciate it.
Yeah, and I guess it's at the stores. I mean, I guess...
It is, yeah, and I have a website, raiseyourparents.com.
Oh, yeah, what's the website? What is
it's called, www.raiseyourparents.com.
Raiseyourparents.com.
There. Exactly.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay, good. Thanks so much.
Okay.
Mom.
You're very welcome.
All right. Take
Bye-bye.
Care. Bye.
Oh, yeah. So, you know, if you want to raise your parents and your teenagers,
hello? 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 Hello. Hello.
But then I spent so many nights thinking how you did me wrong, and I grew strong, and I learned how.
Hello? 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 Hello. 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 Hello? 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 Hello?
Okay, they're saying I'm reconnected. Can you hear me now?
I can hear you, yes.
I don't know what went on over here. Something went on over here. All of a sudden I got blown off here. I couldn't play music, and I know you were there because I kept seeing your phone number. But
Yeah. I was hearing music, and then it stopped, and then it started, and I,
oh, so
and
you
I heard
able-
your...
So that's weird. So you heard music start and stop, and
yeah.
I couldn't hear it. This is okay. All right, we got 15 minutes. Let's talk about the mushrooms.
Excellent.
Go ahead. Tell me about all these. Tell me about the mushrooms and why these mushrooms different from all other mushrooms.
Well, we grow 4 different types of wood decaying mushrooms. And I say that because one of the ways of dividing up the innumerable amount of mushrooms out there is what they grow on, what they decompose to use as their food source. And the mushrooms I grow are all Asian type of mushrooms that in nature you'd find them growing basically on a tree in the forest. And that's in contrast to the more common button mushroom that's primarily grown in the United States, the button mushroom in there. Derivatives, which are the cremini mushroom, the brown variety, the white button mushroom, and the portobello, which is a cremini when it's grown up big. Those mushrooms are all grown on a composted manure-based substrate. They like to have something that's broken down by other organisms first, and you make your in a pile of manure in the forest.
Oh.
So based on what they decompose, the nutritional value and the enzymes that they come to play in their digestion process are quite a bit different. The nutrition, the taste, the medicinal qualities vary quite a bit. There are many species of mushrooms. They estimated in the fungal kingdom there's maybe up to 1.5 million species. Now, not all those are mushrooms. All mushrooms are fungi, but not all fungi are mushrooms, if that makes any sense. Things like yeast that are single-celled organisms are also classified in the fungal kingdom. And we grow maitake, brown beach mushroom, also called in Japan Buna Shimeji, white beach mushroom called in Asia Buna Pea, and a king trumpet mushroom called Ringi in Asia. And they're excellent mushrooms.
And, well, I know that. I mean, I've gotten to taste them. It's like I can't eat enough. I've never, like, you know, usually I throw some mushrooms into something and I go, they're good. That's you know, all right. But this is like, wow, I need to make some more.
Yes, well, you know, one of the things we've started doing is calling these cultivated wild mushrooms because they are fairly closely related to what you'd find in the wild. And they're sometimes called exotic or specialty mushrooms, and they're not readily available in the United States. We consume a lot of mushrooms in the United States, somewhere around 9 million pounds a year, but over 95% of that is all one species, the button mushroom. We're very mycophobic. That's a way of saying we're a little bit leery of mushrooms in the society, but it's not something that the common white bread type of mushroom that we're used to seeing. So it's just now starting to take off a little bit in the United States. In Asia, it's just a flip side. They eat very little of the button mushroom that we eat, and they eat way more of what we consider exotic mushrooms.
Right. Yeah, I see. And usually I with those kind of mushrooms, I guess they're all they're dried. You probably buy them, a lot of them dried, and then you have to reconstitute it.
Yes. A lot of problems with one of the problems in widespread use of these mushrooms is that a lot of these specialty gourmet mushrooms are very delicate and they don't ship very well. So the people that have tried to grow them, if you try to sell them in bulk, particularly like the maitake that's got these very fine leaflet sort of things on them that smash and dry out very readily. So a lot of times you'll see them dried rather than fresh. We've been able to develop a packaging technology that encloses the mushrooms in a protective balloon, so to speak, bubble packaging that extends the shelf life immeasurably. Instead of being a couple, 2-3 days before they start to look bad, they're up to a month they last in these packages. And it's an engineered package because of the plastic. The plastic is differentially permeable to different gases of metabolism, so it extends the shelf life. It also keeps the moisture in and also protects the mushroom from getting beat up and broken by the mechanical damage of shipping. So now the customer is able to get the mushrooms in a lot better shape. They look much more appealing. And although dried mushrooms are nice and convenient to use, they last a long time. There's something is lost in the drying and the rehydration of them.
Now, when they're grown, it looks like they're grown in like pots or something?
Yes. We utilize a technology developed in Japan. They call it a polypropylene bottle technology, where they're actually grown in these reusable little plastic bottles. On a small scale, and it sounds like it'd be a lot of work, you know, having a lot of these bottles around and having to handle them by hand, but they've developed equipment that mechanizes the handling of the bottles, so it's a very efficient way of growing them on a small family scale, or you could scale it up to a large corporate sort of farm scale. Very efficient, it's versatile, you can grow several different species in the same way, you just change the depending on the species and their preference for what they like to digest as an organic material, you change that, you change the environment a little bit, and you can grow several different mushrooms. And there's no waste involved because the plastic is reused many times, and what's left over after the mushroom is done its job of digesting the organic materials, it's recyclable as a soil amendment or fertilizer or even as animal feed in some cases.
Now with the mushrooms, it's like they look like they have a sort of bottom, like they're growing on. You know what I'm saying?
At the base of them?
Yeah, at the base of them. And my question is, that edible?
Well, you could eat it. It would be a good source of fiber, and you get some mushroom tissue in it. But that material is a combination of hardwood sawdust, some corn cob. And it's supplemented or fertilized, so to speak, with some higher nutrition materials such as wheat bran, rice bran, soybean meal. So you could eat it, although generally sawdust is not recognized as a food for humans. But the sawdust has been digested by the mushroom and converted into mushroom tissue, so to speak. But we basically say cut that little base off and discard that. It helps that base helps to increase the shelf life as well, because it serves as a moisture reservoir and also a bit of nutrition for the mushroom to keep living in that little package.
Oh, okay. I'm glad I asked, because that, I didn't know whether like to save it. I thought, all right, I'll save it and use it to make mushroom soup, but at least I know not to do that. Now, when you're growing, let's say, you know, a plastic bottle of one of them, how much would actually come out of one? A pound, a quarter of a pound, or I don't know, we're gonna like.
Well, it's engineered so that they size the bottle so that basically what comes out of one bottle is enough to fill one package. So there's no trimming and cutting of the mushroom. So basically, we try to design the substrate and the size of the bottle to get a mushroom that'll cluster that'll come out somewhere between 4 and 5 ounces. So package it at 4 ounces. Because
so
once you start to,
yeah.
I'm sorry.
Yeah. So in other words, when I'm getting it, I get the package. It's like, you know, that's a whole plastic bottle of that's one growth, as opposed to that was, you're not necessarily like picking mushrooms. You're just taking it right from the
comes right off of the bottle, and in most cases, the mushrooms that we grow, they are almost untouched by human hands. We have a machine that plucks them off the top of the bottle, and then it immediately puts it into the bag and is refrigerated. So any of the post-harvest sort of food safety contamination issues for the consumer are eliminated, because it's enclosed in this protected package. And they're grown in a very hygienic sort of environment, because one of the things you have to worry about growing mushrooms is contamination with other mushroom species and bacteria and whatnot. So it's kept very clean in the growing room, and then as soon as it picks, it's put in the plastic container, refrigerated, and it's and then you don't have to worry about somebody with grubby hands touching it.
Oh, so in other words, because when I see them, I don't see a fleck of dirt on there. And there's no human hands either. So basically, you're saying I don't have to wash them.
Yes, that's correct. And washing them really, they tend to absorb water and they get kind of, you know, waterlogged, and it interferes with the cooking process.
All right. In terms of nutrition on these mushrooms?
Most people don't realize that mushrooms are truly a superfood. They are a wonderful nutrition-wise. They contain a lot of protein. It's a relatively balanced protein. They contain vitamins like the B vitamins, thiamine and riboflavin. They've got a good supply of selenium in there. Which many people are deficient in, and they've related to selenium deficiencies in a lot of disease states. Interestingly, mushrooms are also very high in vitamin D, and it's one of the few sources non-animal or non-dairy natural sources of vitamin D.
Right.
In fact, a 4-ounce package of maitake mushrooms contains 85% of the recommended daily value of vitamin D.
Wow.
And I just heard from a food scientist that they're actually thinking about actually doubling the recommended daily intake of vitamin D, because they see it so helpful to people, and the deficiencies in them are in vitamin D cause a lot of problems.
Now, just to give people an idea, where are people buying them? And are they in the stores, or do we need to go online to order them?
Well, best probably in your stores. We're with this packaging, we're trying to get more into the national retail chains, but it's more widely available. Up till now, you probably had to gone to a health food store or an ethnic specialty store, like an Asian store, to get them. But they're starting to go more mainstream now that they've got the shelf life and people are recognizing more. They're being featured on, you know, some of these television gourmet chef cooking things, and they're receiving a lot of attention for their health benefits, things like cholesterol reducing and helping with diabetes.
But can you buy them online? I mean, or is that?
Well, our business model is we don't ship them directly to customers because they're being perishable. You can't do overnight shipping on them, but it's very expensive. And then even then, if you ship it overnight, they're unrefrigerated during that whole overnight
right.
shipping.
Okay.
And you really want to keep the maintain the cold on them.
Now, so if I'm going to the store, would they say, you know, golden gourmet mushrooms? Would they have that the label on them?
Yes, yes. We pack under our own brand name, Golden Gourmet Mushrooms. We also pack under a couple different trade names, Phillips Mushrooms on the East Coast. We pack under their label. There's also a Hokuto label, which is more geared toward the Japanese Americans, with some Japanese sort of theme for the packaging. And we're starting to private label for more and more people. Basically, the package is really the distinctive part, the bubble packaging.
Right.
But primarily you'd see them in the Golden Gourmet label.
And just to give people an idea, if they're buying, like, what is a retail for, or get, you know, about not some idea of what they would retail for?
Retail price?
Yeah.
They probably retail somewhere between $4 to $8 for a 4 ounce package.
Okay. Which is,
and it,
yeah. Which is not, I mean, that's it. I want people to understand that you get what you pay for. I mean, but people are buying, you know, when they buy mushrooms and they're getting it dried, it's very expensive. So, but you're getting this, and I want people to understand that how long that these things actually last.
Yes, and they're certified organic. And which is a big plus there. One of the things with mushrooms you have to be really careful about is, on one hand, they're what are called bioaccumulators of metals.
Mm-hmm.
So on the one hand, if you grow it in an environment and with a material that's got things like selenium and iron and zinc,
right.
things that are
now
good for human body.
I'm sorry to interrupt. The show is about to end. I just what's the website so people could see this?
GoldenGourmetMushrooms.com.
Okay. I'm sorry. I'm going to have to cut you off because they're going to cut me off right now. But I'll be in touch with you. And thank
okay.
You
thanks
so
for the opportunity
for
to talk about mushrooms.
Okay.
Thank you.
Yeah. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Yes, it's time to end our show. And it goes to 15 seconds. That's a lot. Well, tune in next week. I don't know where I'll be and what I'll be talking about. But maybe it's Friday. Hopefully, everything will work.
Love Talk Radio.